This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
This is the Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show. Another hour of the Jesse Kelly Show on a Monday. Yes, we are going to keep chopping away at some Iranian discussions this hour. Hopefully I'll wrap this up here in 10, 20 minutes, and then we can maybe move on and talk about some other aspects of it. I want to get to emails. I want to do many other things. But before we get to more Iran, before we get to other things, let's honor a hero. It's Medal of Honor Monday time. Every single Monday at the start of the second hour, we take a Medal of Honor citation and we read it and we honor them. Trump handed out a few more Medals of Honor today. We're still getting those citations. They're still coming in. So we'll probably do the new ones in the coming weeks. We got an email recommendation for this one. Remember, you can email your love, your hate, your death threats, Medal of Honor citations you like. Jesse at jessekellyshow.com. We got this one. Dear Jesse, I was paying my respects at the Luxembourg American Cemetery recently, where General Patton still looks over 5,000 of his men. I stumbled across a man named William D. McGee. His cross was decorated differently, and I found out this was because he received the Medal of Honor. I listened to your show and would love to know what he did. All the best, Dean. And his Medal of Honor citation is very short. I will, you know what, I'm gonna go ahead and I'll cover it before I actually read it because it's so short. And let me answer a question we get sometimes. Why are some of these citations so long and detailed? And others are amazingly short, like this one is. Well, remember, they have to be written by somebody. It's someone in the office of Corps writes it. And some people, they're going to simply write it up differently than other people. It's not one author for every Medal of Honor citation. I like the ones that provide more detail. I think the man has earned a write-up where you actually get detail so you don't have to go digging through this or that. So let me just say this. This took place in 1945. You're not a moron. You understand what was happening in 1945. The Germans had been on their heels big time for a couple years. We had already invaded Europe to retake Europe. The Soviets were closing in. We were closing in. And the Germans were essentially trying to do a fighting retreat. A fighting retreat is done for a variety of reasons, but really what you're hoping for if you're Germany at this point in time, Soviets are closing in, Americans are closing in, the Brits and all these other people. What you're hoping for if you're Germany at this point in time is you're hoping, this goes back to something we've been talking about during the show, you want to bleed America to the point where we've lost so many troops, the public turns against the regime in power, the president, and the public starts to demand that you sue for peace. Germany wasn't really under any delusion they were going to win the war at this point by the time we get to 1945. They're just, and it sounds terrible because it was terrible, they're just trying to kill as many of us as they possibly can to make American moms and dads get that letter in the mail, get that knock at the door and say, hey, stop this war now. Sue for peace. Let's have peace. Let's call it a day. That was the idea. The Japanese basically did that the whole war, but that's what Germany was doing at this point in time. Now, one of the ways they were doing this, just awful. Still in wide use today are landmines. There are anti-vehicle mines designed to go off, obviously, when the weight reaches a certain point. So if you were to walk over it, it wouldn't go off, but if a tank or a feminist were to step on it, it would, of course, blow up. And they would lay out minefields. You know what a minefield is. Can you imagine walking through a minefield? Can you imagine walking through one, not knowing it, and somebody in front of you, beside you, behind you, steps on one, gets blown up, what that sounds like? And then the fear that would come over you knowing that they might be all around you. You might be an inch from one and you don't know. Remember, they hide them. What would it be like to be stuck in a minefield? Now imagine intentionally going into one to save men. So without further ado, let's hear the citation of William D. McGee, 21 years old, a native of Indianapolis, Indiana. This took place on March 18th, 1945.
Ready, aim, fire.
Honoring those who went above and beyond, it's Medal of Honor Monday.
A medical aid man, he made a night crossing of the Moselle River with troops endeavoring to capture the town of Molheim. The enemy had retreated into the sector where the assault boats landed, but had left the shore heavily strewn with anti-personnel mines. Two men of the first wave, attempting to work their way forward, detonated mines which wounded them seriously, leaving them bleeding and in great pain beyond the reach of their comrades. Entirely on his own initiative, Private McGee entered the minefield, brought out one of the injured to comparative safety, and had returned to rescue the second victim when he stepped on a mine and was severely wounded in the resulting explosion. Although suffering intensely and bleeding profusely, he shouted orders that none of his comrades was to risk his life by entering the death zone field to render first aid that might have saved his life. In making the supreme sacrifice, Private McGee demonstrated a concern for the well-being of his fellow soldiers that transcended all considerations for his own safety and a gallantry in keeping with the highest traditions of military service. He saved the life of a man, then went in to save the life of another, himself mangled on a foreign shore, yelling out orders, "Nobody come save me. Let me die. I will give up my life so you don't risk yours." We are not only going to honor him, Mr. McGee, with taps. This has a dual taps purpose tonight. I believe the latest number is 6 of our troops have died already in this Iranian action. They gave their lives for this country. Medal of Honor winner McGee gave his life for this country. And we honor all of them, their service and their sacrifice right now. I know everybody has their thing depending on how they're built, but landmines in particular have always been a unique fear of mine, not just from the reading I've done on it, but we were told when we were in Iraq that we would encounter them, and of course they did. They existed over there, and the injuries that come with it being exploded from below, it's just... it's so terrible. I know Vietnam guys went through this all the time. It's a terrible thing. And just to voluntarily go into a minefield, for me, is such insane bravery. It is such insane bravery. If I put a few Legos on the floor of your living room and then put a blindfold on you with no shoes on and told you to walk across that living room, that would get your heart pumping, would it not? You'd be wincing with every step. That's very human nature-wise. Yeah. Now walk through a minefield where that next step is you're dead. You have a leg gone, two legs gone, your reproductive organs gone. That is crazy bravery for me. All right. That's enough of that for now. We are going to now discuss the ugly, darker side, the potential dangers of this, all this Iran stuff that's going on right now. It's a journey fraught with danger. And once we're done with that, we're going to move on, do emails, other things. I promised you it wouldn't dominate the whole show. It's certainly not going to dominate this show every day, and we're not going to do that. What we are going to do is tell you about Relief Factor. We're going to try to take the pain in your life out of your life. When people start to get daily aches and pains, or maybe one particular part of your body is just chronically hurting, it's just always throbbing. My ankle always hurts. My back always hurts. It is so taxing on your very happiness because you can't work without pain. You can't get up. You can't sit down. You can't do anything without pain. And so you stop doing things. And I've seen people I love go through this. Relief Factor was created for you if you're going through this. Drug-free. 100% drug-free. Developed by doctors, but it's natural ingredients. It is a supplement. It will support your body's natural response to that inflammation. It's miraculous the way it makes the pain evaporate over time. Try it. 3 weeks of it is $19.95. Just try it. 1-800-4-RELIEF or relieffactor.com. We'll be back.
Truth. Attitude. Jesse Kelly.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a fantastic, amazing Monday. Remember, you can email the show, jesse@jessekellyshow.com. Now, that was the state of affairs when it comes to all the Iran stuff, the justification you could use, and setting aside all the talking point stuff, the justification you could use for it. But rest assured, you could probably already hear it in my voice. My mom asked me yesterday, after church, we took my mom out Mexican food. We went to go get some fajitas. And she just said, hey, how do you feel about this whole thing? And I said, cautious, hesitant. And so I'll just tell you what I told her. I mean, you can already hear it. War is such a fun thing to cheer on. At first, me too. You see American bomber crews taking out some terrorist scumbag, it makes you want to run out in the front yard with an American flag and fireworks. It's awesome. And start singing "I'm proud to be an American" on a loudspeaker. I have the exact same emotions you do, and that doesn't make us unique. Citizens of a nation love military victories. Love them. It makes us feel good about ourselves. We love it. The reason I am cautious, the reason I am hesitant is, having seen this before, having gone through it before, I know that those emotions you may be feeling right now, or I may be feeling right now, they soon pass. When we got back from Iraq, I don't know if I've ever told you this. When we went to Iraq, we did 9-10 months, I forget what it was, and then we came home. Our deployment ended, and I was getting ready to get out of the Marine Corps soon after this. So what I'm about to say is about this. It's going to sound insanely lame and selfish. I admit that, and maybe it is insanely lame and selfish. But when we got back to the United States of America, we just fought for our country. We were fried out and angry and all the things you are when you get back. We were kind of hoping we'd get a bit of a celebration when we got back. We landed on a plane in California, and then we were going to get on buses and take the bus from where we landed to our base in California, which was in 29 Palms. It's a big Marine Corps base, California. But if I remember right, it was a couple hours to maybe more, 3-4 hours from where we landed. I don't remember the exact details. But we landed, really nothing really. Then we got on the buses, and at least me in the back of my mind, and I know it was the same for my friends, we were thinking, well, there's going to be people all over the sides of the road and stuff like that, waving signs and flags and cheering us on and stuff like that. And don't get me wrong, this is not Vietnam. There was nobody spitting at us or that kind of stuff, but no parades, no signs, no cheering. Now, this is 8-9 months after Iraq started. By the time we got back, everyone had kind of moved on. Not the families who were involved, of course, but the general public had moved on. It's over. Okay, well, it wasn't over for us. People were still over there fighting, dying, going through the end of the world for our world. By the time we got back, there wasn't anything by the time we were driving back to base. I am cautious and I am hesitant because I understand that if this thing turns into a protracted matter, and it very well may, I understand that all the cheering we've seen and maybe done in the last 48, 72 hours, it's going to fade away very, very quickly. It's going to fade, and what we're going to be left with is just the practicality of the matter. Why are we there? How many people have we lost? How much is it costing us? What are we gaining from it? My overall feeling, before I get into the specifics of my concerns, is I'm very cautious. I'm cautious to get too far up or too far down. This is why I counseled you at the beginning of the show to calm down, watch, listen, and pray. When it comes to things like this, it's so easy to get caught up in whatever your emotions may be. Maybe you are a pretty hardcore isolationist type. And maybe you've already convinced yourself that this is the worst, dumbest thing in the world, that we're completely screwed, that Trump just ended his presidency. Maybe that's what you've done. Okay, I got that. Maybe you hate Iran. Maybe you want them wiped out. Maybe you're more of a neoconservative type and you're all in and you spent 72 hours covering your naked body in red, white, and blue paint and singing God Bless America. That's fine too. I would caution both of you. Calm down. This is not going to be a 72-hour thing where we celebrate a cool video on Instagram. This is an entirely different affair with a large, large country and all kinds of, if you'll please forgive the reference after the Medal of Honor presentation we just had, there are all kinds of landmines in front of us, and we're going to have to dance very delicately, and there's a chance we can't even avoid them if we do. What are those landmines? We'll talk about them next.
Jesse Kelly returns next.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a wonderful Monday. Okay, now let's dig into some of my concerns. We outlined so many things about Iran and everything that's going on, and I can't wait to move past this and get to emails. And by the way, you can email your Iran concerns and thoughts, and I'll address those throughout the week. I'm just warning you, this is not going to become the Jesse Kelly Iran Show. It's just not. But the specific concerns, well, you saw what happened in Austin, Texas. My sister used to live in Austin, Texas. Austin, Texas has got plenty of problems, but there was a bar. It is a bar. It's a very well-to-do bar. This isn't one of those rundown dive bars or bars in the bad part of town. It's the nice bar the rich kids go drink at. Some guy wearing a Property of Allah shirt and allegedly had an Iranian flag shirt under the Property of Allah shirt walks in and murders as many people as he possibly can. They say Iran is the number one state sponsor of terror in the world, and that's 100% true when you find out they're funding terrorist groups from Hezbollah to Hamas, the Houthis, and they fund a lot of terror around the globe. My wife asked me yesterday, hey, can you tell me why they're launching drone strikes at the UAE? Why are they attacking European facilities? Why are they attacking all these other countries, not just the U.S. and Israel? Iran is a terror state. And so if your Ayatollah has been taken out and the Trump administration has announced they intend to remove these people from power, then if all you have is terrorism, you're not going to take on America conventionally. If all you have is terrorism, then you will use terrorism. I hope we have experienced the last terrorist attack that is motivated by what is happening in Iran. I hope this was a one-off, as horrible and tragic as it is. That might not be realistic. I don't know if you noticed, but the FBI has announced publicly that, hey, we are on high alert here. They are concerned. About what? I don't know. I don't want to sit here and freak you out. What could those attacks be? This is not made to make you afraid, but when you sit and dwell on what an Iranian terror cell in America could do, it's something to think about for sure. So there's that part of it. And then there's the regime change part of it. Marco Rubio was asked today, Secretary of State Marco Rubio was asked today about this. I'm going to let him speak. He's the Secretary of State. Here he was.
President Trump said overnight that his top choices to now run with Iran were killed in the strikes. Does the United States have a firm plan for how they intend to handle this power vacuum in Iran to ensure that...
Okay, now let me pause before I play his answer. Just in case you couldn't hear, the volume was a little fuzzy. Trump came out and said, hey, the next two people who could run Iran, well, they died too. So we killed the Ayatollah, then the next two people died. Reporter asked Secretary of State Marco Rubio, okay, well, then who's going to run the place? Well, that's the thing here. Here is Marco Rubio's answer.
Well,
so two things can be true. Number one is our mission and our focus is the destruction of their ballistic missile capabilities and their ability to manufacture them, as well as the threat posed by their Navy to global shipping. That's our objective. That said, we would not mind, we would not be heartbroken, and we hope that the Iranian people can overthrow this government and establish a new future for that country. We would love for that to be possible. But the objective of this mission is the destruction of their ballistic missile capabilities and of their naval capabilities.
Okay, I'm going to stop that there. That is pretty consistent with what Trump said. I'll play it for you again as we cover this. So, Donald Trump, why are we there? Why did we strike?
An Iranian regime armed with long-range missiles and nuclear weapons would be a dire threat to every American. We cannot allow a nation that raises terrorist armies to possess such weapons would...
Okay. Played it for you before. Pete Hegseth, same thing. This is clearly the regime talking point.
To the media outlets and political left screaming endless wars. Stop. This is not Iraq. This is not endless. I was there for both. Our generation knows better, and so does this president. He called the last 20 years of nation-building wars dumb. And he's right. This is the opposite. This operation is a clear, devastating, decisive mission. Destroy the missile threat, destroy the Navy, no nukes.
Okay. That's consistency. That's Donald Trump, president. That's Pete Hegseth, Secretary of War. Again, I'll play it. Here's the Secretary of State.
Secretary, President Trump said overnight that his top choices to now run with Iran were killed in the strikes. Does the United States have a firm plan for how they intend to handle this power vacuum in Iran to ensure that an Iranian warliner does not take power?
So two things can be true. Number one is our mission and our focus is the destruction of their ballistic missile capabilities and their ability to manufacture them, as well as the threat posed by their Navy to global shipping. That's our objective. That said, we would not mind, we would not be heartbroken, and we hope that the Iranian people...
Okay. Now let's have a real talk. What if you worked for Coca-Cola, right? Me, I get hired by an outside firm. This is your job. This is your livelihood. You work for Coca-Cola. You've been working there 20 years. You need another 5 years to get your retirement. I, hired by an outside firm, I walk into Coca-Cola, I walk in the boardroom, and I say, you're all fired. CEO, fired. Next 10 people in line, you're all fired. And you say, hey, Jesse, who's going to run Coca-Cola? And I say, oh, I don't know. Best of luck. I turn around and walk out. Does that sound believable? That's not how that works. You can support it. Look, I hate the Ayatollah. Burn in hell. You can support, and maybe you should, the taking out of all the Iranian leadership. It's a gross terrorist-supporting government. I got that. But the idea that America can now wash its hands of whatever happens afterwards is about as believable as the tooth fairy. We can't do that. Well, I don't know. Hopefully the people rise up. Well, what if they don't? The terrorist government controls every aspect of Iranian society. They torture people. They murder people. They slaughter protesters. They're already sending messages out to the Iranian people. Don't you dare protest in the streets. Well, hopefully the people rise up. So we sent the entire American military, not the entire one, but we sent the entire American military across the globe to wipe out a government with no plan for who's coming in after. Hey, guys, good luck. That doesn't work. Because in when that happens, when you create a power vacuum like that, as we've seen over and over and over again, you know who takes power? It's not the guy you were hoping for. It's the guy with the most guns, who's willing to chop the most people's heads off. He's the one who ends up taking power. It's what happens in power vacuums. The guy with the most force and the most violent ends up taking power. Unless your intention is to facilitate some sort of a regime change yourself. Unless America says, no, you're taking power. And then we back that person with money and intelligence and things like that. If we're not going to do that, what did we do? We think Israel can run it? Israel can't do it either. What did we do? Yeah, I'm worried. We'll see. I seriously hope the second coming of Thomas Jefferson rises up and takes over Iran. I haven't seen that work out very well in very many other places. Let's get to some emails. Next.
The Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a wonderful Monday. We're going to get back to this stuff because, you know what? No, I want to try to finish it here. There's another problem. And this is the final one I'm going to discuss. And this is one that's not going to be a surprise for you if you've listened to this show for any length of time. A tremendous concern I have. We here in the United States of America have an internal enemy problem that is massive. And I'm not even just talking about the domestic jihadis the Biden administration brought into the country. Although, I mean, look, we have to acknowledge what's here.
Border Patrol sources telling Fox News that dozens, and in some cases hundreds, of migrants from the countries of Iran, Syria, Pakistan, Afghanistan, Russia, and China have been caught trying to use this very porous border to our...
Okay, we'll set them aside for a moment. Remember that poll we read last week that showed 36% of Democrats are now proud to be an American? That number was, I believe the number was 97% in 2001. Now it's 36%. That's an internal enemy problem. Maybe you've already seen some of the news today. Some of this stuff from Democrats.
It's some undefined imminent threat, which, by the way, is a lie, right? There is no imminent threat. I sit on the Intelligence Committee, Armed Services Committee. I pay very close attention to this, and there is no imminent threat. I can tell you that.
Here, that was Jason Crow. Chris once called him Jim Crow, which was hilarious. This is Senator Adam Schiff.
The Ayatollah Khamenei led a regime that brutalized its own people, launched attacks around the world for almost 40 years. So is the president right to take him out?
No, you're right about the Ayatollah. He was a brutal dictator. This is a murderous regime. but at the same time, it posed no imminent threat of attack to the United States.
I have warned you before, and I'll warn you again, that I do not believe the United States of America can prosecute any extended military campaign when Democrats are this subversive at home. I believe Democrats in the government, in all forms of it, politicians, maybe they're in the NSA, you know they're in the military. I believe Democrats will actually do everything possible to aid and abet the enemy. That's what happens when you lose your patriotism. How can we prosecute an extended war with this level of subversion at home? I do not believe it is possible. I do not believe there is a single historical example I can find of a country that is already in some sort of a soft civil war being able to successfully prosecute a war in a foreign land, because Democrats will simply take every opportunity they can to kneecap it, because these are not people who care about human life. These are not people who care about anything but get Trump and power in elections and things like that. Now, think about it this way. Donald Trump is banking his entire presidential term on this moment on Iran. He is. Those are the stakes of this. If it goes super well, it ends super quickly, it'll be a great benefit to him. It's one of those things you'll put on your resume. If it drags on, if it goes terribly, if there's a lot of human life, American life lost, that's going to be a huge stain on his legacy. Now, which one do you think Democrats are pulling for? What do you think Democrats will now work for? In the American media? American elected politicians, people still in the government themselves. He is going to have to fight a war essentially on two fronts. He's going to have to fight a war overseas in Iran, while at the same time understanding how many knives are coming for his back on the home front. To say I'm concerned about that, that's saying something. And we know at this point in time, the United States government, to my knowledge, has not started using ZipRecruiter to clean out the, what, Chris? To clean out the bad people. You have to clean out the bad people in your company. You have to get rid of the bad and bring in the good. And that's why ZipRecruiter is here. It may not save the United States government, but it can save you a whole lot of headache. Go find out what other employers have already found out, that ZipRecruiter is the freaking best, because ZipRecruiter makes your life easy. It's the hiring site employers prefer the most for a reason. ZipRecruiter's here to find you someone fast. You don't have months to find a new, I'm going to try to get an interview. You don't have that time in your life. You're busy. 4 out of 5 employers find someone day one. ZipRecruiter.com/Jesse lets you try it free. ZipRecruiter.com/Jesse. Headline. Nonprofits began mobilizing anti-war protests 10 minutes before Trump announced the strikes. As soon as the leak went out that we were going to start attacking Iran, the domestic communists already were taking it to the streets. Elected Democrats are already trying to subvert any effort, openly rooting against it. Now, they're not going to voice concerns, as you may have, very legitimate concerns, as you may have, or I may have. They're going to root for American failure because they believe it will hurt Donald Trump and it will help them gain power. This is the problem with fighting a war when half your country is traitorous and subversive. Very difficult, very, very difficult, because it becomes a two-front war. You have to wage your own propaganda war at home against the people who are lying through their teeth while also fighting it overseas. Either way, we will watch, we will pray, we will hope this thing ends quickly and successfully, and there we go. I mean, look, If you're feeling bad, just know this. Lindsey Graham's having the time of his life.
Is President Trump finished the job that President Reagan failed to do? I am a big admirer of Ronald Reagan, but I'm here to tell you that Donald Trump, in my opinion, is the gold standard for Republicans, maybe any president, and when it comes to foreign policy. Maduro, everybody talked about him. Well, Donald Trump's got him in jail. Cuba's next. They're going to fall. This communist dictatorship in Cuba, their days are numbered. The Iranian regime, the mothership of international terrorism, is about to collapse.
American credit card debt hit a new record this morning. American credit card debt hit a new record this morning. It's not that the president cannot prosecute foreign policy or should not prosecute foreign policy. Foreign policy, I understand it is important. It's not my hot thing, but I understand it is important. But the American people are by far the most important thing. And that really, really needs to be where the focus is, certainly leading up to the midterms. I'm finally moving off it. We'll get to emails next.